Whenever feasible, one should always try to eat the root. Would you join me at the table?
Welcome to Eat the Rootcast, a podcast about NBC's Hannibal and the works of Thomas Harris. I'm Cooper, and tonight I have with me...
Hi, it's Miko.
And this is Ophelia.
And we are watching Season 3, Episode 2, Primavera.
Well, that was an easy one.
That was, you know, for a change, and thank you for calling attention to it, but for a change I was able to just, you know, go ahead and get it.
You nailed it.
It's a very common sauce.
This is another episode directed by Vincenzo Natali.
Oh, awesome.
And, of course, written by Brian Fuller. So, really, we're finishing off two bottles of wine here.
Yes.
We have Stark Raving Malbec, which was opened the other night, and the Ménage à Trois Midnight again. And right off the bat, we're going to apologize, because we only got to see this episode once. And usually we get to see it multiple times before we record. But Ophelia and I are going out of town, so we wanted to make sure we got this in so we can be on time with an episode. We open with a very lengthy flashback.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a flashback of the rain from Mizumono and Will going inside and watching the horror and the bloodbath that happened there.
Yeah.
We see the teacup shatter.
There's a lot that goes on because there's... color that seeps in slowly. This flashback starts kind of washed out.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting, though, is that the color that is picked out is the red that's on all of them.
It's when Hannibal suggests Will should wade into the quiet of the stream.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear a little bit of Will's happy music there.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the raven stag is bleeding out...
Yes. Oh, wow.
He bleeds out.
The water, gushes out from under the stag. Wow.
And this is the stream that mm-hmm. Will is being encouraged to wade into.
Yes, yeah, so the black water covers them.
So what do you think of Will's face in pieces of the teacup as it shatters?
Blew my mind. It was... so surreal and so interesting because the shattered teacup has been an interesting motif, and the idea of the teacup shattering and coming back together and then seeing it as a representation of Will, whether it's, you know, his psyche or some parts of him, but having the teacup shatter, and you almost don't realize it at first because it's doing that slow-mo bouncing around, and then all of a sudden you realize that the teacup is actually Will's face.
And you, when I was looking at it, I didn't know if they were using a visual, like just an overlay effect, if we were seeing pieces of Will's face sort of reflected in the teacup.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's that one piece where it's very clearly his ear, almost like a handle of the teacup.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a nice shorthand way to see that Will... shattered and fell apart,
mm-hmm.
yet is coming back together.
Yes.
So we can skip ahead to the hospital bed.
Yes, the teacup reassembled.
And Will is reassembled. Mm-hmm. Will is not the only one reassembled. Abigail Hobbs is there.
Yes.
Okay, did you two know right from the beginning? Because I knew there was no way Abigail was still alive.
No. I felt like, well, I don't know.
Because they did play the Raven Stag were when we first saw her.
See,
oh, I didn't even notice that.
They already stretched what I believe to be scientifically possible.
The credulity of this whole situation.
When you spill someone's innards with a linoleum knife, you are most certainly contaminating the entire body with waste products, therefore causing instant sepsis. I have yet to hear of a way to survive sepsis. So... I feel like if Will's alive, maybe Abigail too.
When Abigail does say that the reason they are both still alive is because Hannibal knew exactly how to cut them,
mm-hmm.
that it was surgical.
In this sense, I'm feeling There's some stretch of his imagination, some fantasy being thrown in there.
Well, we are in a world this season where we're being asked to swallow a major problem with storytelling.
There's a great deal of suspension of disbelief going on here. And I was completely in the same place with Ophelia with this. As I just went, oh, movie magic.
Exactly.
Oh, ta-da. He is so good at what he does.
He's Hannah Magical.
He's Hannah Magical, oh yes.
You don't like that?
Wow.
Hannah Magical?
I just didn't go
is
there.
Is that a show? Is that one of those 360 shows you get to see when you're at a Hannibal?
I think Hannah Magical would be when the show is off the air, and then he comes back for, like, the Hannah Magical fun time happy hour. It's a variety show. I like to think that Lawrence Fishburne would do a soft shoe and probably sing a song. I imagine he's got a good singing voice. No one's going with me here, huh?
I don't know.
Really, I'm willing to go along with a lot of things. I was not willing to go along with Abigail Hobbs still being alive.
But why is it for you that you think
she's had her throat cut twice?
Yeah, but, okay, first of all, she would have had scar tissue built up.
She also seemed to die in the end of the Mizumono.
So did Will.
No, Will was still alive, clearly gasping when that episode ended. Just like Alana, who, while we don't know she's still alive, is in the opening credits, so likely still alive. Just like Jack Crawford, likely still alive, gasping at the end of Mizumono.
All right, honestly, the way that Jack... Okay, let's talk about timelines and bleeding out.
Okay.
So Jack got stabbed in the neck first.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going with carotid artery, he's dead. If we're going with the same concept for Abigail... And in your logic, then she's dead.
In my logic.
Well, I mean, you seem to be selectively removing the magic from Abigail specifically, because
I think it's Jack's just because twice out longer. She's almost died from having her throat cut.
Well, I'm going to say that the first time it was done incorrectly, and the second time it was done incorrectly.
Okay.
No carotid.
I mean, but at the same time,
Jack had arterial spray.
We're not fooling around here. Abigail Hobbs is dead. You know, it's not spoilers from the beginning of our podcast to the middle of our podcast. If you haven't watched the episode, that's ridiculous. You should have watched the episode.
You shouldn't be
and
listening.
And maybe if you hadn't watched the episode and you're listening to this, maybe you just learned a valuable lesson.
Right. Well, don't listen to this show.
We
may not talk ahead, but...
We're going to talk ahead of the show.
We are aware of everything that has happened in this episode, and Abigail Hobbs is dead.
Well, I feel like I'm just saying that along those lines, Jack has to be dead. He has to be. He was bleeding much longer in the same exact spot.
Well, no. Jack got stabbed, like, the back of his neck.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I'm glad Abigail is dead. Oh, honestly, cool. I don't need any more of her storyline.
You're done with Abigail's
Do you know
storyline?
That she seemed to be makeupless? Did you notice that?
I didn't
that?
Notice that.
She appeared to be makeupless in this, which made her look a little
she
haunted.
Looked different than she did on
haunted.
The show. I didn't know if that was simply the actress being older anything like that.
This was a makeup change.
But really, you know, when I first saw Abigail, it's just like, this is a little wish fulfillment-y. This is really just...
I wish it was too both convenient. Of them alive was
it was too convenient.
Too happy ending convenient.
And then... Right off the bat, I'm watching what's going on. Potsy never mentions her.
It's true.
Talks only to Will.
Mm.
And
kind of sees through her.
And then it's sixth sense, you know. It's like, okay, what are we learning from every scene that Abigail's in? She's functioning very much like Will's conscience in this instance. So, I it's not a great cinema sin. It's certainly not a great cinema sin the way the wildling woman who said goodbye to her children on the boat. I am going to spoil, apparently, a two-week-old episode of Game of Thrones here. Then got killed. So, you know, you don't say I'm right behind you. I'm just going
to
go back into this battle for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cinema sin. That's an obvious one.
Yeah.
So... Abigail interacting weirdly with people.
Yeah.
It's pushing that level there.
Okay.
Well, she's only interacting with Will. We don't see her interacting with
Perhaps we need to have this sort of not quite lucid moments,
mm-hmm.
you know, for Will. And it, in a way, it you know, we do have him also building his own memory palace.
Yes.
And perhaps, in a way, this is his wishful thinking that he can have this conversation with Abigail, and we get to work out some things that he's working out as and he's coming out of quite possibly being in an induced coma.
Oh, sure,
absolutely.
For a long time in order to heal.
Well, it said, did it say 8 months later? Or is that later?
Remember.
No, that's when Will is in Italy.
Yeah.
But I like that.
It would take him time to heal.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I like that Will's conversations with Abigail sound an awful lot like Will on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, once you make that leap to Abigail is not real. Well,
except for the wanting to go back to Hannibal, I felt like that shocked Will.
That's the side of Will that wants to go back to Hannibal. That's the side of Will that would have gone.
Mm.
Because there was a piece of Will that would have gone, I think. And I like that he says the wrong thing being the right thing to do
mm-hmm.
was too ugly a thought for
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
The wrong thing being going with Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that can happen happens. It has to end well. It has to end badly. It has to end every way that it can. That's multiverse yeah. talk right there.
Because you can't do the wrong thing. And then I wrote what you're supposed to do. There's something missing in there. I wish I'd written it all down because that sounds like, you know, because they have this, they have this talk that basically sounds like, you know, Will understands that he needs to go find Hannibal again, but there's the guilt of what has just transpired
mm-hmm.
and everything that he's gone through. And that, is he going to find Hannibal for the right reasons or the wrong reasons? Is it so because he feels compelled to...
Well, I think that's what Abigail is saying. It's things are happening both for the right reasons mm-hmm. and the wrong reasons simultaneously.
Yeah.
Your actual reasoning behind doing something doesn't matter. The fact that you're doing it is what matters.
Mm-hmm.
And Will is feeling all this guilt around it. Still, I was really surprised by when Will wakes up in his hospital bed and feels the stomach issue,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes the linoleum knife cutting out from mm-hmm. within him.
And he has the dream. He has another dream that was amazing with the papers falling, and his hospital bed is in Hannibal's office.
Yeah.
And
well, I don't know if that's necessarily a dream.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is Will processing visually everything, you know, because he has these flashbacks where he's actively in the flashback.
This just seems so surreal. It almost seemed like this is the way you would process all this stuff while you were sleeping.
Or while in his medically induced
yeah.
coma.
Or perhaps. While in some semi-lucid state, somewhere in between consciousness. Just the way it all looked with the papers falling and then the clock that he drew with all the numbers being off and how that starts to burn. These all seemed images that seemed less someone fully conscious or thinking about something, more of the subconscious parts of his mind trying to figure out what's happened and where he's at and how to process everything that's happened.
So the key to this scene is the discussion of Hannibal's memory palace
mm-hmm.
and how he'd live in it if he was ever captured.
Mm-hmm.
And his memory palace is vast.
Is vast,
and
yeah.
has this distinctive skeleton mosaic
mm-hmm.
on the floor. And that's what leads to our 8 months later jump forward in time where Will and... I suppose, Abigail Hobbs, walk into this chapel.
They start tying it all in to some of the music that we heard in the first episode, because we get the organ.
Yeah.
That feeling of being in Italy, sort of organ playing that they were doing earlier. And there's a very interesting sort of whooshing sound with it. I thought it was just a very interesting choice as we go from... this kind of surreal experience of Abigail and Will before that, and now here we are, and Abigail and Will are in the church.
Yeah. And I think we're going to get a lot of, you know, like, sick Will imagery this year. Because Will is damaged severely again. And because of that, I think he's really going to have a hard time differentiating between what he should be doing and shouldn't be doing, what's real and what's not real. And I like his mention of that what he believes is more science fiction than faith.
Yeah.
And Abigail has that wonderfully glib line, nobody ever says that G-D will do a G-dash thing to answer anybody's prayers.
Oh, I know, I thought that was great too. It was sort of like, do you actually say it that way out loud?
I've never heard anyone say G-dash D. I've seen people write G-dash D.
Yeah.
I have never seen it.
You've never seen it?
Fully submerged in the church for a very long time.
I don't know exactly what it is, but I believe it's for people who believe that you shouldn't write down the word God.
Yeah.
I guess we were non-denominational, so there weren't that many.
Well, if you're non-denominational, you're actually, you're in that weird nebulous area between.
Yeah. Very weird. I remember growing up, you were not, that's why you're not supposed to say, it's not, you, that's why I was, my family was like, you can't even say, God darn it, or, oh God. You're not supposed to use that at all.
I remember
all.
Not being able to say, oh God, because it's still what they would consider to be an exasperation.
Yeah, or taking the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah, you're using the Lord's name without referring to him specifically, therefore it is wrong.
So
also, this what is we've learned like is say G-D.
So,
well,
I guess that,
no, they wouldn't even allow that.
No.
They would say like gosh. That, they would still consider that to stand for saying his name in a way that wasn't appropriate. We could write his name, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could write, Dear God, I have a prayer.
Dear God. defying God is Hannibal's idea of a good time.
Yes.
That was a clever line.
I also liked, God is not who I came here to find.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And when he talks about the roof collapses, and then for a moment, it appears like the roof may collapse.
Yes.
We do get the soot or whatever.
Well, yeah, it's you actually see the frescoes starting to crack. It's really rather interesting because it shows you right off the bat that you cannot trust Will. Will is again the unreliable narrator here.
Mm-hmm.
So then we get the heart torso.
Yes.
And it is posed right over the skeleton.
Yep.
And,
there's the drops of blood in the Menta Memori circle. Yeah.
And Will is in the wrong place.
Mm.
Him showing up here is really not a good coincidence.
It does seem rather convenient. Yeah. Like, we skipped a lot of stuff to get here.
Yeah.
It seems.
Do we think that he could have been setting up Will by placing this there?
I really think it's a love letter. I think I think the use of the heart is very specific to Hannibal. I mean, to Hannibal and Will's budding affection, their love for each other. It also falls in with the discussion of Dante and the eating the burning heart and the betrayal. Mm. So it's two things. It's something that'll definitely say to Will, by the way, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to come look for me, this is where I am. And at the same time, it probably says, I miss you. Heart.
Heart.
Smiley face.
Heart. Yeah, little winky face.
Mm.
So we get to meet Rinaldo Pozzi.
Yes.
Who is probably my favorite character from Hannibal.
Hannibal.
One of my favorite characters in the entire series because he's... I can't say that.
Spoilers?
Yeah, spoilers. Spoilers! Never mind.
Yes. That's why it's always difficult to talk about some of the characters in here.
Because he's a strong character.
Well, he's a really complex character.
Yes.
And he's one of those real great gray area characters. You don't necessarily know if he's a good guy or a bad guy. Mm-hmm. And I really like that about him. And he was one of the best things about the film, Hannibal, as well. But here we have Fortunato Serlino.
Mm-hmm.
Who I've never seen before, but he is really good as Pozzi. And I like that he's he's playing a cat and mouse game with Will here.
Mm-hmm.
That he read about Will's incarceration.
Yes.
And Will says, keep reading, I was acquitted.
I was acquitted, yes. Exactly. They but have a really nice rapport.
They do. It's a good banter.
Yeah, they do kind of banter back and forth. A lot of great dialogue comes out of this. It's like the comfort of prayer, so we don't, you don't feel like you're all alone. There, mm-hmm. there's a lot of very interesting stuff, and you know they start also revealing that Potsy has an idea that there is a correlation between what's going on here. And somebody who has committed crimes of a similar nature before.
Decades before.
Il Monstro.
Il Mostro. Yep. Il Mostro.
The monster.
The monster. The right. monster of Italy.
Yes.
The monster of Florence. That's what it was.
It's the monster of Florence. Yeah.
Well, and it's great because we don't have, at the moment, we don't have the FBI. We don't have Lawrence Fishburne. We don't have our CSI techs. We don't have anyone to play the investigative word banter games.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing Potsy right off the bat, this is a great way to keep that going while still allowing your cast to scatter.
Yes.
Which is essentially what this show has done. Mm-hmm. We get the episode last week, heavy on Hannibal, Bedelia there.
Oh.
And then this episode, which is Will, sort of Alana.
Yeah.
And not Alana, sort of Abigail.
Abigail, yeah.
And then Potsy, Hannibal's barely in the episode.
Basically, it's like a flashback and a picture.
Indeed.
Is really all we get. I thought it was very interesting, though, to do the reveal of the photo. Because I thought that they would keep this idea that El Monstro could be Hannibal as a, we're not sure, this sounds very much alike.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pursue this idea. I had imagined that would be a little bit more of an investigation.
Sure.
I was kind of surprised right here in season two. Oh, and by the way, we're pretty sure that this is your guy.
Well, I don't remember in the book if Il Mostro is Hannibal. I think Il Mostro is just a case that disgraced Potsy, I want to say.
I read this book months ago. There's a part of me that thinks it's like that it is a sort of a dark stain on his career, but it's similar. And there are moments where they think it could be the same person, and I think it's what makes the crimes that start happening. And things that start, some things that he's dealing with, this Dr. Fell, where he starts to put things together. And I think he has a moment where he believes it may be the same person, but I don't think they ever reveal that. And I think it's one of those red herrings where they want us to think it's the same person, but then sort of partway through you find, I don't know whether you find out it's not. It didn't really seem.
Okay, so apparently a lot of the talk was that Il Mostro stopped killing during the time Hannibal was incarcerated.
Was incarcerated, yeah.
And the Il Mostro's victims were arranged to imitate a painting.
Mm-hmm. Which is exactly the way Potsy describes it in this episode.
Yeah. Okay, so, and there's a description of Lecter in which it's said that people from his Baltimore Society days, referred to him as the monster. So there's a lot of implication.
There's a lot of implication.
That Hannibal is Il Mostro in the book.
But
this one is just very much going with that idea.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I remember. They never actually ever came right out and said. You know, Potsy never had that exact, like, this is this person. I don't remember, and they're going straight for it.
And I like the way it's set up, because we get another tableau here, the Botticelli display,
mm-hmm.
which is called Primavera,
mm-hmm.
and it's the garlands of flowers, which I can't help but think is a shout-out to the Fannibals, who wear the flower garlands.
Yes, the flower garlands.
I mean, it's the same thing mm-hmm. there, but it feels too connected. To be coincidental.
Mm.
And Will's comment that Potsy shares the gift of imagination
yes.
is nice. And I love the part where Will says, I grabbed the gift by the blade.
Yeah.
And Abigail says, you grabbed the wrong end.
Yes.
This episode is odd because it's fairly straightforward, but at the same time, gorgeous and dreamlike. But it's one of the few episodes of the entire series that seemingly just goes plot to plot to plot to plot to plot. We're just going from direct connections from point A to point B, and it's sort of unusual in that way. Yeah.
They don't really have all the procedural stuff that we are used to seeing, but in a way it has that more clearly delineated, more straightforward quality that we would get from the FBI sort of crime scene procedural parts of the show that we used to get, except we used to go back and forth.
Right.
In one episode. In this, we sort of went surreal and more into painting beautiful pictures and the back and forth of the flashbacks of the previous episode to this one being more of a forward motion. Because we go, from this great interaction between the two of them to, Potsy basically saying, you know, it has a habit of sticking to you.
And Blame has a habit of not sticking to Hannibal, yeah.
Yeah, and, when he hands him the envelope, it's the body is the heart.
Right.
You know, sort of like, these acts are following you or still connected to you. And then we move on to actually, doing a crime, sort of the crime scene with Will at the heart and talks about what he sees. So,
well, it's unusual because Will is going into the pendulum mode, but we don't have a pendulum.
No, we don't.
So that makes me wonder if Will is no longer able to do the pendulum.
It may be just for now while he's in this healing phase. I would not be surprised if this shows up later on as he gets stronger and starts to have more of a stronghold on himself and, where he is in this reality. There are times where it does seem like because he is healing both mentally and physically that he's still not quite strong enough to get there. But it's still within him to do it.
Yeah.
And it was great to, listen to him have that familiar conversation, he twisted you.
Fractured every bone to make you malleable.
Yeah, like a topiary.
A topiary.
Yeah.
A Valentine, there it is, written on a broken man.
Mm-hmm.
And then the heart beats.
Yes.
And falls apart, which is, this is one of the most unsettling moments
in
the whole series.
I'm glad you said that because in big words I have creepy with exclamation point.
Because the heart falls apart and essentially becomes the Raven Stag.
Yes.
And it is Randall Tear, saber-tooth Randall Tear creepy. It's just unsettling and kind of cheesy, but that makes it worse,
yeah.
I think.
Well, I think what it is that when it opens up and you see the stag antlers start to come out, you had imagined that the stag is going to be birthed out of this.
Yeah.
Piece that's broken
apart. I thought earlier the stag was going to come out of his chest.
Uh-huh.
When Will was feeling the something inside him.
Right. And then
I thought that was going to be Raven's stag.
Instead, it was the knife coming out as opposed to going in. But what's really disturbing about this is that it's not quite a body.
Right.
It's not quite a stag. It's
essentially the reforming fetus that is this Raven Stag.
And there's no head, there's no face.
Yeah.
There's just antlers coming out of this odd sort of neck area in a body that looks like a skinned animal. Because it's walking and it's also taking us into the uncanny valley.
Yeah.
Where it is so not like anything that's real, but our brains want to think that it's real, and that hyper-realism really touches at us in that really uncomfortable place that we're usually in when we deal with that area of the uncanny valley. And usually that's accompanied with, you know, that hyper-realism of, you know, androids that are built that look like humans but move in a way that is far too fluid,
right,
and too perfect. And our brains process it and go, something here is not wrong, and I have to feel repelled from it.
Right.
And that's what I felt like looking at this. I was so repelled by it, but then I couldn't stop looking at it. Yeah, very, very uncomfortable.
So interestingly, Abigail sort of is present at Will waking up a few times in this episode. Mm. And this is another scene where that happens, where Will is in the on the stairs and she wakes him up. And he talks about how he feels closer to Hannibal there. And Abigail asks, how did he know we were here? Will says he didn't, but he knew we would come.
He anticipates the movements, at least anticipated if he had left them alive.
Right.
This is what they would do. And I think we added a little bit of comedy here, which is going in the same vein as the first episode. We get Will saying that Hannibal is like Lucy holding the football, and he keeps, you know, going for it. He keeps falling for it every single time.
I like Will as Charlie Brown.
Right.
I mean, it gives me that little a throwback to some Arrested Development with the Charlie Brown music.
So when Will is dying on the floor at the end of Mizumono, you just hear the Christmas Town is here, the Christmas time is here sound. Yeah, I'm with you. I think we should create that, because that'd be horrifying and brilliant.
Okay.
it also speaks to Lucy the psychopath.
Well, yes, Lucy.
I have always felt Lucy is a psychopath.
I love her 5 cents. The doctor is in horrible advice that she gives.
Oh my god,
that is my favorite.
Wow, we just made.
We need to put some.
Oh my god,
red and gray curtains on Lucy's little.
We have artists. We should talk to our artists.
Yes, artists in our audience.
A little Hannibal with the doctor is in 5 cents.
Yes,
sign.
We could do that with. Yeah. We should just do it with our
make one with a cardboard.
Yes, I'm going to do that.
Yeah. Okay,
before the episode airs.
And
yes,
and on the sides of the little front piece, it's got the black and red curtains.
Yes.
On the side.
So someone's got to make that. Brilliant. On the cardboard.
I'm going to do it.
Okay, you're
going
to do it.
I'm going to do it. That's
you take
great.
A picture of that, and then that goes on the Tumblr feed,
yes,
and that goes on the
most
Facebook page.
Definitely.
Our new icon.
That is a hilarious way of tying that together.
We've got to make this a thing, because I didn't make the jump of Lucy as the doctor when I heard this. I just took it literally as a football scene.
But yeah. And that whole idea of you know, talking Charlie Brown into this same ridiculous moment over and over. Like, just sweet. No, I swear I'm not going to do it this time.
I'll let you kick it.
I'll let you kick it. And then he goes, and then she just cruelly
every time
pulls it away. Exactly. Every time.
That bitch.
Yeah. And that a whole thing that Charlie Brown still will not give up hope.
Nope.
That one day Lucy will have a change of heart.
And then just wants to
Charlie
play.
Brown has faith in her better nature. Ah. She doesn't have one, but he has
right.
faith.
Exactly. So, now we need a Lucy Wendigo now.
Oh god. So then there's the question, what if no one died? Mm. What if we all left like we were supposed to? Because then we have this bit of flashback that Will made a place. Yeah. For Abigail. Mm. And here's where Abigail unravels.
Yeah.
This was the place for her.
And this is a throwback to the
only place.
The discussion about making a place for Clarice, which is the place of where we have the lack of Misha?
Misha, yeah.
Misha. Yeah. Where her place was taken away, so then another place was opened up in the world.
And we see Hannibal doing this. He tried with Abigail. Mm, yes. He really tried to replace Misha, and I'm assuming we're going to get more about Misha in this season,
mm-hmm.
because this is the information season. This is where we're going to learn stuff. For good or ill, we're going to learn stuff that...
I like that, for good or ill.
Whether
we like it or not.
I have faith in Brian Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have faith in anyone adapting Hannibal Rising.
Mm.
So, hopefully, Brian Fuller knows how to get around the shitstorm that is Hannibal Rising.
I think if there's anybody who
yeah.
can. Yeah.
I have faith.
Yeah.
I have faith that he's either going to abandon it or he's going to do something phenomenal with the information. Yeah.
Well, and combining it with Hannibal
mm-hmm.
for half a season, that's a good way to go.
Yeah.
You know? Abigail, her neck wound reopens.
Yeah.
She bleeds out and vanishes.
Disappears.
And Will is alone again. Mm-hmm. But Hannibal watches from the rafters.
Oh, yes, gorgeous, gorgeous jib shot.
Sneaking. Yes.
We do that long jib shot up to the ceiling, past Will, up to the window. Ta-da! Hannibal.
So that's an interesting concept I wanted to go back on. What if nobody died and they all left like they were supposed to?
So if Will had accepted the gift.
What would that have looked like?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, you know, we've seen what it looks like when Hannibal is
They seem to be playing house for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day.
What, Will and wow. Hannibal?
Well, Will and Abigail and Abigail and Hannibal.
Sure, but that was before Will knew what Hannibal was. I think Will would want to hang out with Hannibal for as long as possible, but the moment Hannibal kills somebody, Will's better nature. Will is a good guy.
Yeah, we'd probably be in the same place that Bedelia is.
No, I think Bedelia is far worse than
far
Will.
Worse.
Yeah,
but probably more like not the every moment that she's having right now, but that moment where she got terrified and she wanted to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I think there'd be more moments like that where they would be having Abigail and Will would be having a lot of moral conflict.
Do you think Abigail would?
I think eventually. Because Will is there.
Yeah. So would Will restrain her?
I think he would. It would become a conversation.
Sure.
Because Will still, I think even if he walked away and went into that world, I don't think he could completely leave behind his moral conscience.
Right.
I think it would arise at some point. And if he didn't take action to stop Hannibal, there certainly may well be a conversation between him and Abigail where he's like, okay, I'm starting to have a question. I have a doubt. And he would have no one else to turn to. And,
well, but
you know,
I think that's taking away some of Will's agency. Mm-hmm. This is the guy who for half a season was pretending to be Hannibal's buddy
mm-hmm.
and doing horrible things to trick Hannibal.
Yeah.
You know, Will may have been shaky morally in there, but it's still like almost everything he was doing was to take him down.
Yeah.
He wanted to take him down in the most humane way possible. He didn't want Hannibal killed or have anything bad happen. He just wanted him arrested so he couldn't hurt anyone else.
But could he have walked away and joined that world with Hannibal?
I don't know.
Knowing all that he knows and all that he has been through.
I don't think so. Yeah. I think it would have been a dirty little secret Hannibal and Abigail had. I think Hannibal would continue to try to mold and shape Abigail.
What it is? It's Lestat and what's her name?
Claudia.
Yeah.
Louis is Will.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's what I'm saying, is I don't think Will would ever be 100% into everything.
He might do what he needed to survive.
Exactly. And
okay.
And that is the perfect way, because Louis didn't like anything that he was doing.
Very right. true.
It always questioned it, always had arguments, always told them what he thought of them and how they acted, but really didn't do a whole lot to leave the situation.
So Hannibal could have made the Dexter case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's him and Will and Abigail in Italy, and Hannibal's like, well, this guy did horrible things.
Right.
And look what he did.
Yeah.
Aren't we making the world a better place without him? Okay. I can go with that metaphor of the Lestat and Louis thing.
Yeah.
I find it very hard to stomach the idea of a Will Graham who goes along with things.
And I think that's ultimately why we think this is, we're exploring it as a realm of fantasy.
Sure.
I don't think any of us here truly believe that Will could do that.
Because he'd also be walking away and betraying Jack.
Yeah.
He'd be betraying Alana.
There's a whole lot, Alana. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think there is too much baggage.
Yeah.
There is so much pain that I don't think that he could just be a sort of a passive, the passive aggressive partner, you know, where it's like, I don't like what you're doing, but I guess I'll just sit here, you know.
No, I'm a conscientious objector.
Exactly. I don't think he could be that passive.
I don't think so either.
I think so much would boil up, and I think that's pretty much what we're all thinking, that the reality of this, it would have to be pure movie magic. We're propping up a lot of, you know,
You have to take it with a whole bag of salt.
Of disbelief. Exactly. Yeah. We're backing up a pickup truck worth of grains of salt here. So,
Let's talk about one of the most well shot scenes in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
The juxtaposition of Will leaving that crime scene, leaving the red dinner, and Abigail leaving the red dinner. Mm-hmm. Now that we know that Abigail is dead.
Yes.
So we see Abigail on a stretcher, Will being taken out on a stretcher.
We see a body bag.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's not, we don't even really see her, we just see the zipper going up over her face, and then she's in a body bag.
Yeah.
And we're seeing some of the most graphic mortuary footage I've ever seen in general, let alone on network television.
I've seen it on network television. Oh, okay, maybe not network television. It's on A&E and...
Well, different. For a show that's about mortuary stuff.
Dr. G.
And embalming, sure.
Yeah.
But
Like I expect this on 6 Feet Under. Mm-hmm. I don't expect it. On NBC.
A basic procedural, you don't really usually go into this much.
No,
it's so in your face.
Yeah,
it is kind of hard to watch, but it is interesting. You're sort of watching the end, the really really final end moments of Abigail.
And I think that might be why they're doing it, because they want to make it very clear. Abigail is dead.
Mm.
We got a little bit more of her. But that's really it.
And she may come back in Will's memory palace.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're not totally saying goodbye to this character.
But it's not going to be like a Chiltern story.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. She is only going to exist in these conversations he needs to have with her, you know, in his mind or whatever part of his psyche she now represents.
But do you think she actually does? Do you think Will thought she was there? In all this stuff?
No.
Was he... So...
I don't.
He was not delusional.
I don't think he was. Okay. I think he was talking to Abigail like a voice in his head.
Why do you think then, once she was, for lack of a better term, unzipped and bled out, why do you think she's gone now? Is that Will accepting her death?
I think Will just continuously is going to see it, probably for the rest of his life.
He's
just going to have the ghost of Abigail haunting him.
Because it's his fault.
Well, and her
because
throat...
Because Hannibal made it
his
fault.
Her throat's going to open up forever.
On repeat. Okay.
He's going to carry that burden for
I
a
feel
long
like
time.
This is going to be his repeated record skipping.
Yeah.
It's going to be Hannibal. Yeah. That's going to be Abigail constantly dying.
Exactly. Even this whole scene is almost indicative of that. Because, you know, she's beyond help.
Right. And he tried really hard.
Twice.
Because he crawled to her and put his hand... He took his hand off his own dying body.
Which is why I was thinking, okay, well, he just removed the pressure that he was applying to try to save her. So if she's dead, he's got to be dead.
Yeah.
But Whatever.
Yeah, but instead we see more movie magic.
Are you willing to go here, though?
You know,
I know how fast you can bleed out from those things.
Yeah. And
while a jugular vein or a carotid artery is much faster, I mean, you got 3 minutes. So that's why I'm like, Jack is dead.
Well, I'm very curious if we're going to, once we've, I mean, it seems clear that what the show is doing is giving us the pieces before giving us the whole.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing Hannibal and Bedelia. Now we're seeing Will and Abigail and introducing Potsy. I imagine, I don't know, next week we're going to see Jack and Alana.
It's possible.
Possibly more other characters.
Mm-hmm.
If this season is going where I hope it's going, we may even see Mace and Verger.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm hoping episode 4 gives us, okay, now let's rewind and see what actually happened. Let's see the intervening time. Let's see how all this came together. Let's see how Will survived this, how Jack survived this.
Oh, I don't know if we'll ever go back to that. I think this is it. I think this is all they're ever going to show, because they do this entire sequence. We go back and forth between Abigail's finality and them saving Will.
Yeah.
And I don't think you even need to do any more than this at this point. We've seen him be taken away from the crime scene, being brought to the hospital, all of them work, you know, and this, the, you know, being worked on. It's like, while she's being prepared to death, they're working on saving his life. And I can't imagine them needing to go back and spending more time with that, because we have a lot of other really cool stuff down the path.
We've got a lot going on.
I think we're going to see a couple of storylines, and then we're going to get all William Gibson and have everybody in the room at some point. it almost seems like we're going to go on that route.
Sure.
Where everyone's going to kind of, we're all on their separate path. We're going to have some fun with Hannibal and Bedelia for a little bit, and a little Will, and wrapping up Abigail and introducing Potsy's storyline. And then we will probably wrap up Alana and Jax in some way.
Sure.
But I think spending that much time in what's happened at the end of last season eventually is not going to be fun. I think people are going to want to move on.
Right.
And I would like to move. I think I've seen all I need to see, at this point. I think there's nice, beautiful, cinematic little moments that are not buttoning everything up perfectly.
Sure.
And I'm actually kind of okay with that.
Well, maybe Jack and Alana's storyline is going to rush him on the hell out of this and give us the rest.
Right. You know, exactly. Through flashbacks,
yeah.
Things like that, their perspective of what happened, not necessarily.
Well, because Alana theoretically saw it all, because she's just lying on the front steps.
Right.
Oh, it's like, oh, yeah, they're all in there.
Exactly.
When you get a chance, if you could pick me up and make sure my neck's not broken.
Right. Yeah.
So Will is lying on the steps of the chapel,
yeah.
Which he does a lot in this episode, very sort of relaxed.
Yes.
And I like that Potsy asks him if he's praying.
If he's praying.
But Will feels his prayers would be constricted by the saints and apostles.
Yes.
So Potsy wants to take Hannibal down.
Oh, yes.
Potsy is the definition of hubris here.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I can do this. I know you all couldn't.
Right.
They're in America.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. This is the person who is supposed to, you're lying on the steps. You won't even pray. Come on. This is all you got?
When Will says, without a doubt, you know, it's like you couldn't catch him when he was a kid. What makes you think you could catch him now?
Exactly.
I also just say every time I think about this line, the catch him and catch him now. I've got the Pokeball in my head.
We gotta catch them all.
Will is trying to like,
he's gonna put Hannibal in the little Pokeball.
Just get Will. So, I mean, yeah.
Well, he also points out you should be praying he doesn't catch you.
Yes.
Right.
So, you know, that is, you know, be careful of that hubris, because we've all been there.
And if he can possibly be content, because this is Will acknowledging, I got gutted.
Eight
months ago, and here I am in Italy, where I know the guy who gutted me is.
Yeah. Right.
So, if you can possibly be content...
I am chasing the man who tried to kill me, but, like...
Sort of loves me, I don't know.
Sort of loves me and sort of surgically made it possible for me to still be alive today. I'm kind of on his last nerve. And if I make the wrong step, he's going to surgically do it the right
way. Yeah, maybe this time he won't
be nice.
Do it as nice a fashion. But Will says to do the thing he can't do. He suggests to Potsy, let Il Mostro go. I can't, but you should. You can walk away.
Yeah.
You don't I am mentally disturbed and cannot stop following Hannibal. You might be able to.
And this is Potsy's big failing. This is what part of what really makes him a complex character is he was disgraced for jumping the gun when he was following Il Mostro. He fingered Hannibal, theoretically, the young man drawing Primavera at the art place.
At the art place?
Wherever Primavera is displayed, I don't remember.
The Louvre?
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know where it's displayed.
But Hannibal was sketching it. This was what led Potsy to see him.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's at the Uffizi Gallery in Florence.
There we go. And so now he's got that thing where he needs to finish this. Otherwise, he will never be able to not be haunted by losing Il Mostro.
I like that through... there's the part where they're walking through the... I don't know whether it's catacombs.
The catacombs? Yeah, beneath the chapel.
Yeah. Well, you know, because during all of this, from the moment they start having the conversation about, praying on the steps, and we go into this, to have this kind of conversation... And then to wind up going through these catacombs, where it's so easy to get lost, and that
when Potsy immediately loses Will,
it's like Potsy follows, and I love the whole you shouldn't be down here alone. I'm with you.
Yeah, but you don't know whose side I'm on.
Right. Yeah. There's a more of that really great banter, here. Oh, was it carry yourself back before you can't carry yourself.
Right. You and I carry the dead with us.
Yeah.
We both need to unburden.
They're just laying some beautiful groundwork here. And I loved everything about it.
Yeah.
The location.
And the camera was just moving. And you get the sense this is not a set. You feel like this is real catacombs. Mm-hmm. There are skeletons everywhere. It's really distressing.
Yeah.
Well, that is what they would see, being in the catacombs. That's exactly how it is. It is an extremely overwhelmingly distressing place to visit.
And Potsy says, you are already dead, aren't you?
Yeah, I liked this.
And Will says, buena notte, commendatore.
That means good night, right?
Good night.
Okay.
And Hannibal is in the catacombs.
He is.
Because he's everywhere. He's everywhere you want to be.
He's here, he's there, he's everywhere.
You get the threat, I know there's a horror movie about the catacombs.
There are a few horror movies about the catacombs.
But you get that sense that, they're just messing with us, going into this creepy place.
Yeah.
And they're filming it as the most suspenseful they possibly can. But then again, Hannibal's really there. I mean, I didn't know. I honestly got that feeling like, he's not. He's probably not actually down there.
They just think he's down
there. He passed through.
Right.
But he's not hanging out. He's not watching these guys.
Well, no, and I think this really speaks to the relationship here. Will is going down there not to kill Hannibal.
Mm-hmm.
Will is going down there for closure.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the same reason Hannibal's down there. Because when Will is trying to lure Hannibal out, it's with, I forgive you.
I forgive you.
And I believe him.
Mm. Not get out here, you son of a bitch. Yeah. You tried to kill me.
Yeah. It's like, how dare you? You killed Abigail. I liked her.
Yeah, exactly.
He's
you suck.
You may or may not have killed Alana and Jack, as far as we know.
Allegedly.
I was actually shocked by the forgiveness.
Yeah?
Mm. I was shocked.
Do you think he means it?
I don't know. Yeah. I honestly don't know, because I didn't expect him to say something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise, too.
It may have been something he was wrestling with, but I didn't think we were going to hear him admit it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was, okay, Will's a very tortured soul. So, yes, I'm sure he was, and like we mentioned earlier, with what Abigail, or the ghost of Abigail, which is really Will's conscience talking to him, says that she would go back to Hannibal. So we have this dichotomy inside Will's head where he both knows Hannibal's wrong and he shouldn't go with him, and yet still kind of wants to go away with him, even right. though he was gutted by the man. And, you know, Abigail's throat was cut, and Ilana was pushed out a window, and, you know, I'm assuming he knows what happened to Jack also. And he still has this sense of, I still want to go with him, even right. though it's dangerous, even though I know it's wrong. So,
and isn't that the most horrible thing for Will, is that he actually does care?
Mm. But, I mean, you've got these two sides fighting inside of Will's head. But I don't think I was prepared to hear him actually verbalize, I forgive you. I mean, what? I mean, that's broaching on a level of psychosis I didn't know he had.
Sure.
Because to be able to forgive the man who did this and did all of these things, he's got to be hard up for Hannibal. Seriously, that's just not
this,
what I expected.
This is a love story between two heterosexual men, according to Brian Fuller. That's what this is. It is the very essence of bromance.
Well, this fits.
And
right
that is
in.
Also an excellent cologne, I imagine.
Oh, really?
Essence of bromance.
Essence of bromance. Yeah. Eau de bromance.
Eau de bromance.
Oh dear.
Well, okay. So, do you think it's possible that we have all this duality in Will? You know, mm-hmm. he's there to catch Hannibal, and he's there to be with Hannibal. He's there to talk to. He's talking to Abigail because he doesn't have Hannibal.
Yeah.
You know, that's why he's there. So is the I forgive you both, I'm luring you out, but I also forgive you. I'm using this thing that I know you want, but I also mean it.
I don't know. It's so hard to know because he, like you said, he played him for so long.
He did.
These horrible things to try to lure Hannibal.
Well,
and he was fully prepared to kill Hannibal.
He was, yeah.
Didn't follow through. And so I don't.
And he warned Hannibal.
I feel like there's a part of him that probably does, in a very weird, twisted way, forgive Hannibal for what he did.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like he could probably rationalize it that this man is not in full control of his demons, or is a demon. I don't know. Either way.
Right.
And he could probably rationalize forgiving him in a way of, like, I forgive you, for you know not what you've done.
Kind of way. Yeah, well, Hannibal is behaving as animal. He is an animal. Right. He is behaving as animal. It's the scorpion and the
scorpion and the turtle.
Yeah. It's like, well, why did you expect me to not be a scorpion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why did you expect me not to sting you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess in a way he's saying, well, I'm purely hypothetical here, saying that he forgives him because Will should have known better. Will got close to the snake and got bit.
That should be.
He should know better, because he can't really blame the snake for acting like a snake, or the scorpion for acting like a scorpion. He should have known better than to get that close, or to have those emotions about somebody that is, you know, lawless.
Yeah.
So I feel like that might be where his apology or where his forgiveness is coming from, but I don't know how wholeheartedly all of Will forgives Hannibal.
Yeah,
sure.
I feel like there's got to be a part.
Well,
of
there is still a lot of Will that Will is the good guy,
right?
In all this, Will is the good guy. Ambiguous or not, he is the good guy.
And Hannibal knows this.
Yeah.
Otherwise, Hannibal would have been like, "Oh man, I'm right over here. I love you. Give a big hug." And then they skip away into the sunset.
But you know, I'll just ditch Bedelia. Don't you even worry.
You know what? She's gotten kind
don't
of
you even
yeah.
worry.
It's always been you.
She's trying to run away. It's always been it you. Has. It has. It's always been Will.
Well, I mean, this episode just follows up on the greatness of the first episode. This is an amazing 1-2 punch. Yeah.
This ending was one of those, I have to wait till next week, moments.
Where Hannibal vanishes and Will just goes out of focus.
Yes. It was like, just blue wash. And it was like, no. And now
you dread the executive producer's credit.
Oh,
just totally. Like, no.
You see that, yeah, it is. It's like you just, every part of your soul just screams to the heavens, no. And now that we don't, it's not like, well, I'll just go to the next episode on the DVD.
Yeah,
we're not,
we're
in real time now.
Yeah, now you have to deal with it like the rest of us.
Exactly.
Now you know our pain.
Right. Just wait till the season finale. Knowing that it may never even come back.
You haven't
had to deal with that yet. The renewal anxiety.
I went into it with knowing that there was this, you know, the road was going to continue.
Yes. So that's a good place to end it.
Yes.
And we'll be back next week with episode 3 that I'm really hoping. I have no idea. I'm hoping we find out Jack and Alana's story. And I'm hoping it's interesting because they're sort of second tier.
I'd also like to know the surgical way in which Will was cut.
So you're hoping for is our favorite CSI guys to show up and hand wavy it. It's like, you know, it was okay because Will had previously something and, you know, he had whatever.
Or maybe it only sliced through the fat that's around his intestines.
That
and
may
his
be.
Actual intestines were never punctured.
Punctured the intestines.
I think Price and Zeller should be both skeptical that Will could survive this.
And then explain it.
That bantery argument.
They would know.
Bantery exposition that we so desperately crave.
The surgeons that put them together would know. And I want to hear it from their mouth.
Well, it's also, I mean, this wound is
it's
Will's
the catalyst in the book, Red Dragon.
From Red Dragon. Mm-hmm. So we have to, you know, I guess it is such a vital part of this character. That, you know, Brian Fuller really wanted to put this in somewhere here. They don't even fully explain
it. They do. I don't recall exactly what they said, but I vividly remember that he was unzipped from his stomach up. You know, Hannibal ripped him open.
But that's more like what Abigail did. But I think in this, we saw go from side left to right.
I think he went up.
Did he go?
Yeah, I think he went up.
Yeah, the way, from what I remember in Red
Dinner. I don't know that I can rewatch the Red Dinner again. It is very traumatic.
It's described as being a shortcut across
can,
on the bottom and then up.
It. Yeah.
It's sort of like a, I just
like
remember
L, maybe?
That visual image whenever they talked about the scar.
Right.
You know, that it doesn't go across his entire abdomen. It kind of goes, there's like a really deep part that goes sort of halfway across and then it goes up. Is sort of the visual image that I remember from, you know,
well,
from
then that could
that.
Be done surgically in a way that might actually avoid all organs.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Going deep and across was, you're going to hit
almost
something.
Getting Ophelia with us.
She's almost on board. She's almost willing to take the hand waviness that is going to be inherent in this world where there is no internet that says, this is what Dr. Fell looks like.
Right? Exactly.
I mean, of all the things, that I am most skeptical about that.
How
I am willing to believe
a
lot of other things, but really?
Yeah.
But I'm okay, because it's amazing.
Exactly.
If it wasn't amazing, I would have turned it off.
You have to make peace with it and move on.
Just harness your inner zen-ness.
Yes.
Go to the river.
Go to the river. Go to the happy place.
Listen to Will's happy music.
Yes, Will's happy music.
Do
and
some
the rushing
fly
of the water.
Maybe fish
for a little
bit.
In your hip waders.
can you feel it? Are you there?
I'm there.
While you're there, you can find us on Twitter at EatTheRudeCast, at Technogeisha, at Ophelia Tesla, and at Swingset Life. You can email us eattherudecast@gmail.com. And check out our Tumblr, eattherudecast.tumblr.com. www.thefilmmagazine.com.
There's going to be some interesting pictures coming.
We also have a
Facebook page.
We do have a Facebook page. Is it just facebook.com/eattherootcast?
I believe it is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so we need to shout out to Ben, at MadeUpMonkey on Twitter, who's just been sending us new artwork for the podcast, pretty much on a weekly basis.
And it's awesome.
And it's awesome. Yeah, he's done some great stuff.
The detail. I've got to get the rest of them around up on Tumblr. Like a parentheses form.
Yeah, isn't that great?
That's a wonderful touch.
Yeah.
And so we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us at the table.
Hey, this is Dan Savage from the Savage Lovecast and Savage Love, and you're listening to a Swing Set podcast at Swing Set FM.